Okay, let me continue with the Ksuva from where we left off last time. One of the points that I had wanted to emphasize is that there should not be any space in the Ksuva. At least there shouldn't be any space after you have finished filling in the blanks. Now, if you take any of the standard forms, you find that there's more than ample space for anything that you're going to write, unless you write very large, in which case there will be space left over, gaps between the words. That presents a problem because it's also these daif. If, for example, you have Mosaim Zuz, and there's space, it's easy to write Mosaim Elef. It's only a space of three letters. Any place where there's space, you could write in anything you wanted. And moreover, at the end of the Ksuba, let me ask you, what are the last three words? So the last three words. What's that supposed to mean?
It's all fine.
It's all okay. Why do I have to say it's all okay? Aren't the adim being made on what's above it? So if they're being made, it must be okay. Why do they have to tell me it's okay?
So it's standard words, which means that this is the end, you can't speak anything.
Precisely. It is gibberish. It's there for no reason whatsoever. It's there only in order to fill the space, not so that it tells you you're finished, you can't add. You can add. HaKol Shor V'Kayim doesn't mean you're finished. It's there to fill the Shita Achreina. If you're writing, then once upon a time people wrote. The Shor V'Kayim is very suited to this because you have letters like a Kuf and a Resh and a Shin. You can elongate them. I won't bother going, you can do it better than I, I'm sure. I won't go showing you how you can make broad letters out of those. Pretty hard to make a broad yud. But if you've got a hey, and it's hard to make a vav. Got a hey, you have a resh, even the shin, the mem, you can elongate until you come to the end of the line. Now, if you take one of the forms that are available or used to be available in bookstores, in storage stores, most of them went out of their way to center V'Hakol Shor V'Kayim, middle of the bottom line, beautifully centered, very aesthetic, very pleasing, just it defeats the whole purpose. If you're putting it in the middle of the line, then you've accomplished absolutely nothing. If you look in the back, you'll see that one of these has V'Hakol Shor V'Kayim, and then it's got curlicues or who knows what to fill the rest of the sheet. Now, there's nothing wrong with that, because that's exactly what we're going to tell you to do when there's any other space. If there's space, you can do one of two things. Either you can write ovals, curlicues, or to make things easier, particularly if you're not an artist, you take a ballpoint pen and you take a ruler or an ordinary credit card and you make a straight line. And it doesn't look too bad, you hope, if you make the line straight and you've filled up the space. Now, me'inyin l'inyin v'aysa inyin, calligraphy. For some reason that I will not understand, people pay a lot of money to get artists to write the Ksuba, and then, lo and behold, they hang it on the wall. I don't know why in the world hang it on the wall. I do know that if you go to museums, you find illuminated Ksubas. Why people should have done it 500 or 600 years ago, I don't know either. It's about as romantic as a life insurance contract. Would you put a life insurance contract on the wall of your living room, even if we're beautifully illuminated by an artist? Why in the world should you put a ksuba on the living room, that wall? That's my way of discouraging Chosn Kala to spend a lot of money. Why am I sorry to see them spend a lot of money? I'm sorry to see them spend a lot of money on the whole wedding. And we waste literally tens of thousands of dollars on things that are, to my mind, a narish guide. If you want hider mitzvah, I can find you better ways to be mahader, more significant mitzvahs. And I don't know what hider mitzvah has to do with a caterer. They have to do something with the dancing, with the simcha. I didn't know that the simcha was totally in how much money you spend for the hors d'oeuvres or who knows what. But besides the waste of money, it becomes a very difficult kind of situation when a calligrapher charges a couple of $100 for all of this, and then Masada Kedushin has to say, I'm sorry, this is not acceptable. Now, it cannot be acceptable for a variety of reasons. Of course, if you work closely with a calligrapher and waste some more of your time, it's called Bittul Torah, then you can avoid some of this. First of all, he's got to have the nusach correctly. Number two, they very often don't know the tzuras ois. Now, it's not a get, and it's not a sefer Torah. And if you have a negiya, it's not going to apostle. But if you don't have a tzuras ois, I don't think it'll apostle b'diavid, but it's supposed to have a tzuras ois. And if it doesn't have right tzuras ois, then again, it's one of the things that separates the men from the boys. You shouldn't be besadr a ksuba that, you know, the letters aren't what they're supposed to be. But that's a minor little point. The major point is that we write ksuvas either as squares or as rectangles with clearly identifiable margins. Calligraphers do all kinds of things. I once saw a handwritten ksuva in the shape of a dove. I never saw anything more osilizdaif than that. You give me a bird, and it's not very hard for me to fill it in to make a rectangle out of it. And lo and behold, I wrote all kinds of things into the ksuba, you know, long after there was Das Mishayev, long after the Edim had signed, etc., etc. So if you're dealing with calligraphy, you're asking for trouble. And there's no reason for it in the first place. If you're dealing with a plain, ordinary ksuba, which shouldn't cost you more than 10 cents, because you can take one and Xerox it, it doesn't have to be in fancy colors, it's easy to fill out with no problems or space, so you fill in the spaces so that nobody can write in those spaces. So that's the those are the things with regard to the ksuba itself, yes?
If one is using calligraphy and one has like a big oval shape or something,
I have problems with an oval shape.
If the borders are totally filled in with pictures up to the right.
Oh, yeah, if you filled in the borders, then you don't have an oval. Yeah, the writing is an oval, but yes, once you filled in the space, there's no room to write anymore, so fine, yeah, no problem, except the terrible expense, yeah.
What about space at the end of the ksuba before the edim?
There should not be space before the chsimas edim. Chsimas edim should be right underneath without enough room to write other things in between. Now, the chsimas edim, you write pliny ben pliny aid. Sometimes the aid is already printed in the ksuba, doesn't make any difference. Basically, I think I said this before, you ought to get the witnesses, the edim, to take a napkin or a piece of scrap paper and practice writing their names. They very often don't know how to write their names. Now, I have less of a problem if they are professional edim and they write their names every day of the week. But very often it's the first time that he signed his name in Lashon Kodesh, and he's signing his name in the Gemara. You find that somebody used a sign of a fish or whatever for his name. But if it's the first time he's writing his name, it's an ordinary name. You have to know how to spell it. And remember, we've gone through some of this. Leib is one yud, not two yuds, etc., etc. And it's with an aleph at the end instead of a hey at the end, if it's a shemlaz, like shraga, vchule, vchule. So that's just one of the things to be aware of. And also, the practice is if one is a kohen, he signs first, even a levi signs before he is soil. But that's a minor little point. Now, a couple of other things with regard to the text of the ksuba. The phrase for a psula is Mosaim Zuz, Dechozilchi Midraisa, for an almona, it's Amaltado, Dechozilchi Midrabonon. I'm sure you're aware of the fact that it's a machlekes whether the ksuba of an almona of a grusha is certainly a drabonon. It's a machlekes whether the ksuba of a psula is a drabonon or a drabonon. So tell me, the misader ksuba or the edim, who maybe amaratzim and gemurim, don't know this machlekes, they are now being machriya machlekes rishonim with regard to whether the ksuba is a drabonon. Does that make sense? Of course not. What is this? It's one of the reasons why I strongly suggested that you take a look at Rabbi Kelemer's Ksuba, I forgot the title, the Sefer already, where he explains everything in the Ksuba. You don't want to be embarrassed by somebody asking you this question at the Chosin's Kabbalah Sponim. The difference here is very significant. We're dealing with different Zuzim. There are biblical Zuzim and the rabbinic Zuzim, because they changed the monetary value. They issued different coins. So Chosilchi Midaraisa means that these are the Zuzim, it's Kesef Shalteira, not Kesef Tsuri, Kesef Terabonon. There was the Kesef Deraisa is 8 times more than the Kesef Terabonon. So the Chosilchi, it's not double. The Ksuba of a Psul is not double that of an Almona. It's more than double. It's in addition to being 200 against 100, it's also the difference in the weight of the coins. You will find, it's not in the sources, I don't remember the simon of the Abi Yomer, but Rav Avadya Yosef is very, very upset at Ashkenazic Mesadre Kiddushin in Eretz Yisrael, who use their text, the Chosilchi Midaraisa, even if the Chosin and the Kala are both Tzetzoye Edut HaMizrach. Edot HaMizrach. And he thinks, the Sfardim write to Rabbanon. They were Machria Laloch, it said Rabbanon. We are Machria, there was a Deraisa, and we write it so we know what the Chos was Machayev himself. I don't regard it as a terrible problem at all, and I'll come back to the same point in the context of the next little problem we're going to talk about. As long as the Chosin knows he has a choice, there's no big deal. The Chosin could be Machayev himself, Tosis Ksuba. He can Machayev himself whatever he wants. Whether it is proper for an Ashkenazi to tell a Chosin Svardi, the Mitzad Hadin, he's Mechuyiv in Zuzay Deraisa, and Zuzay Derabonon, I'm not going to enter into. If it's an ear that has only one vest, maybe yes. If, like in all of Eretz Yisrael, we have different kihilis and even different rabbonim roshim in the various cities, Ashkenazic and Sephardi, you probably are obligated to tell the host, and he doesn't have to sign this if he doesn't want to. He can sign a Sephardic ksuba. However, I doubt that the Sephardi will complain, because we have a standard Tosis ksuba, which are mechuyev na mitzad hadin, because it's the minhag hamedina, and it's almost like a Hakona, not quite, but the Sfardim still bargain for the Ksuba, and everybody puts in a different amount, and the amounts don't mean what they say in different places. Again, I'm not a bookie in the, it's like Lita and Galicia and whatever, you come from a certain place, they're certainly talking, but I do know that when I was young, you probably haven't seen it, but I was present when they auctioned aliyahs. They auctioned aliyahs not in dollars, but in shilling. And members paid half price, which meant that if a member bid 100 shilling and somebody else bid 75 shilling, he was actually paying less than the guy who bid against him, but the member was entitled to a discount. And supposedly everybody knew that 100 doesn't mean 50, 100 doesn't mean 100, 100 means 50. And they knew how many shilling there were to the dollar for purposes of auctioning on aliyahs. Well, Svardim have the same kind of a little game that they play. In some places, whatever you write should be multiplied by 10, because I just don't want people to know how rich I am. All the schnorrers will come knocking at my door. And the other place is exactly the opposite. You've got to divide by 10, because I'm writing what I really want to give you, but I'm not that rich, so I can't. So you know I only mean a tenth of that. I took tenth as hypothetical. But different kehillahs had their own little practices, and that became an umin ublibei b'leiv kol adam. So in places where and they bargained for the ksuba, it wasn't Mosaim Mitzvus, and it wasn't Mosaim Skugim Kesef by the time they were all finished. It was whatever they claimed, and they do it now. It's just their own shkolim, plain ordinary shkolim. Chadashim. But when the Kostin is willing to write a much larger amount as a Tesis Ksubis, was he care about the Mosaim Zuz, the Chosi, the Chimid, the Raisa? It's also part of this Tesis Ksubis. In any event, that's with regard to the amounts of the Ksubis. Now, one of the problems that Babi Nisena Harabim we have to talk about is the ksuba of a bu'ula. Now, I gave you as the title Bu'ulas Atzmai, a lady who is consorted with nobody but her future chosen, and that's what you find discussed in the Chosin. It wouldn't even have occurred to them that there could be any other situation. So let me deal with Bulas Atzmai, and then we'll talk about an ordinary Bula, or we'll go back from one to the other. One little point with which I will begin. If the Kala is visibly pregnant, please do yourself a favor and everybody else a favor, and don't write Psultada. It's a chucha v'tlula. If the Kala is wearing maternity clothes and you write Psultada, Neilad Bambatya is a milsid l'shchicha, and we do not subscribe to immaculate conception. So, she's pregnant. She's what to do, we'll talk about in a second. If she's not pregnant, but it becomes evident to you that, again, Baba Nisena Harabim, that the bride and the groom have been sharing an apartment for a lengthy period of time. It's not as if they rented the apartment a week ago and they both signed the lease, but they've both been living in this apartment. I don't think that you have to inquire. We've got Umbenis and Chazokis. You know she's not a psula. Now, what do you do about it? Well, what do you do about it? The short answer is that if it's public knowledge, I don't think you should write psul tado again. It's worse than embarrassing. It makes it turns into a chukha and tlula. If it's not public knowledge, which is generally not the case, when they're doing it, they're not ashamed anymore, so everybody knows about it. If it is public knowledge, don't write psul tado. If it's not public knowledge, you are under no obligation to write anything but psul tado. That there is a minor problem if you are going to be one of the edim on the ksuba and you know it's not true. I would strongly suggest under those circumstances you take two edim who have no knowledge of what's been going on between the parties. As far as they're concerned, every young lady has a cheskes psula and they are not mechuyev to verify it, and they write psul to them. They know that you know, and therefore I don't think that you should write psul tado. It's v'isem nikim mi'ashem mi'yisroel. It's mepsik ishikro. Whether technically you have to be cheshish for it or not, it's not a matter of concern. You have to know one thing in the United States of America. Everything is mutter except lies. To the American mind, a lie is yehorig ve'al yavar. Remember, Nixon wasn't impeached for the crime, but for the cover-up of the crime. Crime was nothing. It was the cover-up. It's the lie that you can't get away with. They don't know the 150 heterim for Midvar Sheker Tirchok that you will find in the back of a sefer called Titein Emes Liyakov, which I think should have been named Titein Sheker Liyakov. But I'll come back to the Dvar Sheker Tirchok in a minute. I don't think that a Rav should be in a position where he's in effect testifying to something that everybody knows is a lie and knows that he knows it's a lie. So we'll come back to what you should do in a moment. But the Adim can do whatever they want. You are, this is presumably a professional confidence. Certainly trying to keep it from anybody else it is, and you should certainly treat it as a professional confidence, and therefore you have no reason to disclose it to the edim who are going to sign a text that says psul tado. By the same token, I think you have an obligation to inform the chosen that he's not mechuyev in masayim zuz. We'll come to Bulas Atzmai in a minute. But if she's not a psula, he has every right to insist upon Meyo instead of Masayi. I assure you he's not going to stand on his rights. He'll be more than happy to write Masayi Mezuz, particularly even if he's not so bright, if you encourage him to do so. But I think he has to be informed. Otherwise, it's a kind of belief in the Iver. You're telling somebody Machayev himself in Moman that he's not Mechuyev, and you're trying to make him believe that he's Mechuyev to do all of this. Now, let me go to the Bulas Atzmai that they were talking about. The Bulas Atzmai, I think the earliest source that I gave you is a Chassam Sofer. And it's rather interesting. Do you remember the page? Did I write it down? I don't remember. The page in the handout. No? Nobody remembers the page? Okay, good. Page 53. It's one little paragraph, which is in brackets. Ulin subta noisem futas atzmai, a maskirin by Leamaltov, Lebulto. He even was considering writing Bultada. Elo stam plinista da. I'll come back to that in a second. Ukshir ksubosa, hoisi noi heglichtevlo. Now look at that lotion. This is written in either in Matisdorf or in Presburg, depending upon the date. And he says, "Hoyisi noyeg lichtevay." Sounds as if he's in New York almost. I mean, to me, it's a pella. He says this more than not. This is not a one-time occurrence. He says he used to write Mosayim al piloshin haskamas tur shulchan aruch. He's talking about the chiyashir for a mefute achemasosi b'sefer dogma revolve. That's the Nidhi Behuda's notes on Evan Ezer. Dainu benaro avaloi b'begeres. A mefute is only a naro. There's no mefute b'begeres. The tour that he's quoting says that if you marry the mefute instead of the knas, it turns into the ksuba. Now you have to write the mosai because that's the knas of a mefute. Then lo elamone. Move on. I don't know what the tapella. He was being Masada Kedushin, and he forgot that it was only a naro, not a begeris. Says v'chein herizokin, v'chein roy, etc. That's all he has to say here. Now he wants to write. So he says that he now it's not what he does anymore. Mefutas atzmai. He writes what plinistido. And he writes, Mone, not Mosai. Now, I presume, I don't know whether it was known that it was Mefutas Atzmai or wasn't Mefutas Atzmai. I'll come back to that in a second. But and he doesn't want to write Bultada. That's for obvious reasons. They don't go and be Mefarsim all of this. There's no reason to spell it out, Rochel Chakdano. You can write Itztada, this woman, or you can write Plenistada. Now, I prefer Plinistado. I would prefer Plinistado for a curious reason that has no bearing on halacha. Yiddish is idiosyncratic, and it depends which dialect you speak. There's standard Yiddish, the literary Yiddish, which is a kind of a Russian Yiddish, which is even pretty standard in yeshiva circles. And then obviously there's Hungarian Yiddish, there's Lithuanian Yiddish, and there's Lithuanian Yiddish. A Lithuanian Yiddish-speaking person doesn't always refer to his wife as mein Weib or mein Freud. He refers to her as mein Plainiste. Now, it's not Russian, it's not Polish, it's Aramaic. Plainiste, though. No, hi, Plinistado, now you're my wife. I'm giving you what a wife gets. You get whatever I'm giving you here. That's where he gets the Plinistado from. All right, now I know he didn't speak literally Yiddish. Maybe one didn't influence the other, but it's certainly a parallel kind of a usage. So the way to do that is to write Itztado or to write Plinistado. I prefer Plinistado. Again, I may be totally wrong. I haven't done a sociological survey. But I prefer that people not understand the shinui. I suspect there are more people who understand itztada over plainistada. Plainis, maybe they'd understand. But plainista, I don't think they'll understand at all. I think it's a a homonym, it's a synonym for psula, and let them think, what do I care? But if what you write is irrelevant, and if you prefer itztados, write itztados, you write whatever you want if it's known that she is a bulo. Now, the this is when it's bulas atzma, at least so far. Reb Moshe has a number of tshuvas dealing with precisely the same problem, and they're here for you. The first one was a ksuba that was written for somebody who was a bulas atzma. They were living together, but they were living together because they were civilly married. They got married bar kois, and Reb Moshe says, number one, she's entitled to Masai. And number two, she, even if she's not, and number two, you can write Psul Tado also. Why does Ramesha say she's entitled to Masai? She's entitled to Masai because it's no worse than a cotton who gets married when he's a cotton or she's a tana, and it's pretty hard when she's a family, unless the father's Mekabel Kedushin. But you'll be dealing with the shitas that hold that a cotton can be Mekadish and then grows up afterwards. He becomes Mechuyev Niksu, which is already a Bula. So Rav Moshe, it's Adas Nesuyin Rishonim, that wherever there was Nesuyin Rishonim, you're Mechuyev Mosayim, even if right now it's not Mosayim. And he's Medame Nesui Arkois, the Nesui Rishonim of Cotton, and says it's Aldas, the earlier one, and therefore she's entitled to Masayim. That's a Chiddush. Well, it's fine. It's his Chiddush, and he says this. He says, Mitzad Hadin, the Bulas Atzmai, at least when it's in the case of Arkois, when it was a civil marriage, he thinks is Masayim. In the late, and even with Ger and the Gieris, they were both Megayer, and now you have to write a Ksuba, and he thinks it's Aldas, Nesui, Rishonim, and therefore she's entitled to Masayim, even though she's a Kieris, she's only entitled to Mother. Goes beyond that and says that, what difference does it make? The next Shuva. If the Chosin wants to be Mechayim, himself Masayim, even if it's not Bulas Atzmai or whatever, even if she's Stama Bula, he can be Mechayim Masayim if he wants, Mechayim whatever he wants, as long as you tell him that he's got the option of turning down this exaggerated amount. As a result, I think that it makes no difference that you can write you can write Masayim. I wouldn't write Psul Tado unless it's unknown to the people that she's not a Psula. But if people know that she is, that people don't know that she's a Psula, you can write Masayim b'chosi l'chi midraisa, and even allow the Eidim to sign that she's Psul Tado, as I said a little bit earlier. If it's known that she's a Psula and everybody she's not a Psula, you can still write Mosayim. I'd hesitate to write the Chosi Lechi Midaraisa if everybody knows that she's a Bula, but the Mosayim you can certainly write if the Chosin is willing to accept it. So that's the problem with regard to a Kala who you know is not a Psula. It works out to be a little bit complicated. Again, when you're dealing with a Kala who is known to have consorted with this Chosin, I presume that if it were others, people, there's no public knowledge of that. I don't think they should be writing Psul Tado. You can write Mosayim. You can write pretty much whatever you want, but write Istado or Penistado or what have you. Now, again, under the chuppah, you don't have to read the ksuv altogether. And if you do read it, I also don't advise you to read Psul Tado when she's pregnant, even if you didn't write Psul Tado. But you don't have to read it over the microphone. You can talk into your beard, or swallow the words, or say whatever you want to say, or skip it so nobody will know the difference. That's, you know, it's a minor problem. The way you write it can become a problem, and the Chochem Eino Peroshoi, and explains things in advance. Okay, any problems with any of that? Now, one other little point with regard to this on page 70. You have a marsham. And the marsham is talking about whether you should write psultado in a case such as this. And he says that you shouldn't write psultado. However, that's because of gam mishpacha, or the phrase that he uses, it's mutar l'shanos. And the whole point of the marsham is that it's not only mipnei hasholem, but for the gam mishpacha, it's also mutar l'shanos. He thinks that that's, say, a chiddush, but it's there. He says you can be mishana if you want to be mishana. Now, one other point that I want to emphasize, and that you won't find in any of these materials. You may come into possession of information that you shouldn't be disclosing, but you shouldn't be suppressing either. You may discover that this kala is not a psula, that's bad enough, and you may discover that her previous boyfriend was not Jewish. That presents a problem. Not in this kala, she's marrying a Yisrael, but she may become a widow, and she may decide for a zivusheni to marry a kohen. She's osur to a kohen, and the velus la'akum is osur to a kohen. If the first ksuba says psultado and she's an almona, the next masadra kedushin will take it for granted that she is mutter to a kohen. It says psultado, ksuba was mosayim, and she was Nishik Sheira, of the best of everybody's knowledge, why she should be also talking if she became an almona a year ago or whatever. However, this woman is also Tokoyin, and the second Masada Kedushin is likely to take this Ksuva, which says Psultada, at face value, and be Masada Kedushin with a Koyin. Therefore, in that case, even if nobody knows that she's a Bu'ula, in that case, I would always write Itzada or Plenistida. Now that and you as the Masada Kedushin the second time around should know that that's a red flag. If it doesn't say Psultada, then there was something out of the ordinary, and make your inquiries. But you write Psultada, you would have every right to rely on what's written there, and therefore I don't think it should be written in that kind of a situation. By the same token, if it's a girl who simply consorted with a non-Jew and nobody knows about it, because it wasn't on a regular basis, it happened, whatever happened, even though you've written Psultada, again, I would see to it that the Edim have no knowledge of this, and you're writing Itzada or Plenistada under the chuppah, either you skip it or you read Psultada. You can read what's not there also. You're not mechuyev to mefarsim barabim. But as far as the writing is concerned, which will be used as evidence of one sort or another, I think you should be careful. Okay, now, any problems so far? Let me go now to the rest of the text of the Ksuba. You've all been in classes where they fill out the Ksuba, and after the Kabbalah's Kinyan, the Masader HaKsuba makes a big production of writing Vikonino. You get the photographer to take a picture of the Kabbalah's Kinyan, and then the photographer takes another picture of the Masader HaKadushin writing in Vikonino after the Kabbalah's Kinyan. Very nice, very fine. Don't do it at your first chasna, because you're likely to forget to write the Kanina after. You'll be more nervous than the Chosnan in college. As was pointed out, and you have material, particularly the English article I gave you at the end, people have forgotten to write the Kanina. Now, what happens if you forget to write the Kanina? It's also not the worst thing in the world. I'm not sure you have to write the Kanina in the first place, and therefore if you didn't, it won't pass all the Ksuba. But that's b'dieved. Chatchila, you certainly have to, if for no other reason than the shitas that hold that you need a kinyan to be mishabed metaltalin after the takonos agreinim that were mishabed metaltalin for priyas aksuba, but you know, b'dieved, it's not going to make all that much difference. Now, the word vikonino, people were filling in after the Kenyan because they were afraid of what I spoke about before, which is essentially a Mechzik Yishikra. They didn't want to enter into something that seemed as if it was a Sheker. You're writing Vikonino, and it wasn't Vikonino. How can you write Vikonino? It never happened. There are two answers to that. One is a Lomdish answer, and the other is elementary. The first is that there's no Mechzik Yishikra except on a Maisa Besdin. The only one who is chelik is the Rimi Dan Pierre in Tosis in Ksubis. La'aloche, it's not a Maisa Besdin, so there's no Chayshin L'Shikra. That's the Lomdish answer. The simple answer is that the whole Ksuba is a Sheker from beginning to end. Every Shtar Chayv, as conventionally drafted, is a Sheker. Kaysin Leva Afal Pishen Malvima. And what do you write for the Leva? You write Reuven, Lova, Meya, Zuzim, Meshimen. But he didn't borrow it. Of course he didn't borrow it. He's preparing the advance. That's why Kaysin Leva Afal Pishen Malvima. You can't write this for the Malva when the Leva isn't here, because the Leva hasn't acknowledged you got the money. And you're not just writing it, you're signing it also. But you can, the village scribe. That's what a sefer used to do. He used to write the shtori chayiv, and the witnesses used to sign, and they gave it to the loiva, not the malva. So what's this different for every shtori chayiv? And I said, it's the sheker from beginning to end. How does it begin? It begins after the recitation, Bechel the Shabbos, the whole day, Lamin Shon the Monenkan, and says, V'tzovi, Reb, Pliny, Ben Pliny, Chatzandanon, and he said, V'invomar lahado into, and he told this wife, obviously, I'm saying, oh, Almar lahu, he psulted the, obviously, into, he asked the girl, be my wife, and he proceeds to marry her. This is not referring to the proposal. This is the Maisa Kedushin. There is no Maisa Kedushin. You're writing all of this. This is written, and the Edim are signing it, even after the Kanina. Mele the Kanina becomes true by the time they signed it. There was a couple of skinny. But V'chach Omar Chasandanon L'Psultado, that never happened. It's going to happen under the Chuppah. He's going to say, Harei Mekudesh, he didn't say it yet, and you're writing it as if it already happened. That's also a Mechzik Yishikra. But it's not my kasha, it's the Ran's kasha. And the Ran answers that the Nusach of all Shtoreis is in the form of an enthymeme. And if you don't know what an enthymeme is, it's a syllogism in which there is an unspoken premise. You don't announce everything, but there is something which is understood. And what is the premise that is here understood? There's something that's missing in the text. The text should begin with, in bold letters, that when this, start with the Shtar Chayv, when this Shtar Chayv is Yetzim Mitachas Yad HaMalva, you will then know that the Malva lent money to the Leva. Because otherwise, how did he get it? The Leva wouldn't have given it to him unless he had received cash in hand. So when it's Yetzim Mitachas Yad HaMalva, you know that Reuven borrowed money from Shimon. Hu adin, hu atam, you write the Lashon Ovar and the Ksuba, because the Edim are saying, when this is Yetzim Itachas Yad HaYisha, you know that the Chosin gave it to her, because also, how did she get it? The Masada Kedusha has no business giving it to the Kala before the Chuppah. Now that's a terrible Amaratzis. You certainly can't give it to her until there's been a Chuppah and the Chosin's Mechuyev and all of this. Otherwise, it's like a Shtar Mezuyev. You're giving the Malva Shtar that the Malva is not entitled to at this point. So I have no problems with writing, and not at all, even Lachatchila, writing Vikonino before the Maisa HaKinyan. You want to have your Chumra, fine, so write it in afterwards. And B'dieved, if you forget to write it, you can be Seimich on all of the many Shitas who maintain that there's no big problem. Now, one final thing with regard to the Mesira, to the Ksuba, and that's this Mesiras HaKsuba. Now, I know that there are sources that purport to go back to the last century, But in the Chadoshim, in Korvo, there's the new Chumra, which I never saw in my youth. That doesn't prejudice me against it, if I understood what it was all about. And that is that after the Kriya Saksuba, the Sadr Kiddushin gives it to the Chosin, and he calls over the two Edim, and I've even heard him tell them to be Edim Zira, and the Chosin now gives it to the Kala. I have no idea what's going on here. A ksuba is a shtar raya, not a shtar kinyan. A shtar raya doesn't have edim sira, doesn't need edim sira. It makes no sense whatsoever. At least to me, it makes no sense whatsoever. And I'll soon give you a reason why you can't do this. Now, there are people who try to justify it, because again, this seems to go back. I don't know where it came from originally, but it seems to go back quite a while. There are some who maintain that they have edim sira because you have a fail-safe Maisa Kiddushin. If for some reason did I talk about the ring last time?
Yeah.
Alright, we'll talk about the ring. I should talk about the ring before the Maisa Saksuba. Okay, I'll talk about it later. In case the ring isn't the Shofar Pruta, or it doesn't belong to the Chosin, you now have a stark erison. The Ksuba becomes a stark erison. Why? Because as V'chach Omar La'ado Yitzda'ado Psultado Havili Into Kedas Moshe V'Yisrael, that's Nusach V'Shtar Kedushin. So he now is being Mekadoshar V'Shtar. I shrug my shoulders and I say, number one, I didn't know that the person filling this out was Mechavin Lishma Lishma Ulishem Shtayerson, and it needs Lishma. And there's an Arsameach, not talking about this problem, who thinks it's a kind of Stoma Lishma Koi. I don't know why it's Stoma Lishma Koi, possibly because they're already engaged, but it's a difficult story to start with. In addition, my problem is that this isn't the Nusach of Ishtar Kinyan. Nusach of Ishtar Kinyan is Sodai Mechuraloch, not Mocharti Sodai Lecho. This is Loshon Ovar. Not Rav Henkin thinks Loshon, he doesn't talk about this. He thinks for Ishtar Kinyan the Loshon Ovar is good enough. I don't know of anybody who said it before Rav Henkin, but I know it's kind of doing all of this because in the end you have Shitas Techuyas. It doesn't quite make sense to me. Another one came and said that in case it's not the Chosin's ring, the piece of paper is worth the Shofar Pruta, so he's Mekadosher with a piece of paper. That doesn't fly as far as I'm concerned, because it's clearly Daitol Tabas, not Daitol Nior. This girl thinks that she's getting a ring for Kesef Kiddushin. She's not being miskadeshes for the worth of the paper. So I really don't see any reason to do it, frankly. I know why it happened. I don't know if I wrote what I believe is the real reason. I'll explain in a minute. But I see no real reason for it. And to me, this is a chumra d'osi lidei kula. What if you have a chupas nida? And chupas nida are much more common today than they were once upon a time. So, don't tell me that the kadmoinim of one generation ago were in chayshish for it. Therefore, we don't have to be chayshish for it. Chupas nida, for reasons I think I spoke about a little bit before, is much more shkriach today than it was once upon a time. So, and it's the chupas nida. Is the chosn allowed to give it to her? We have enough problem justifying handing her the ring. So it's, the issues in the ring come kachas, is not yet b'chiv nor the harchokis. But once he said harit b'kadesh esli and gave her the tabas, he can't hand her anything. Why can he hand her the ksuba? So no business handing her the ksuba, she's a nida. So now what are you going to do? When it's a chupas nida, you're going to make sure to give it to the kala's mother, which is, I think, standard practice, or was standard practice. Now, if it's not a chupas nida, then you'll give it to the chosin and make a production of giving it to the kala with eidim mesira and the whole shebang. It's a public announcement that this is not a chupas nida, and that the other one is a chupas nida. You're making an announcement when it is a chupas nida. That's certainly not midarke hetznius. Therefore, I never give it to the chosin to give it to the kala, but then, I'm a reform rabbi. We established that last time, didn't we? Generally, what Rabbonim did was to give it to the mother of the Kala to keep for the Kala. The real reason, I suspect, was that they didn't want to hand it. Actually, don't give it to the mother of the Kala. You give it to the Kala and tell the Kala to give it to her mother, which is Lemayla Hoymeri. You can give it to the mother of the Kala if you so prefer. But the standard practice was to give it to the Kala and let the Kala give it to her mother. She doesn't want to go walking around with it on the way to the Yichud room, etc., etc. Now, the real reason that I think they didn't give it to, they began giving it to the chosen, was because, to use the Yiddish expression, so it's a nishkepast. The rov didn't want to give it to the kala, so he gave it to the chosen. The chosen gave it to the kala. He didn't want to hand it to a woman. Again, I consider that to turn out to be a chumre dosi de kula. In this case, it's not even a chumre, it's a midas chasidus at best. That's also the kula in terms of the tznius, etc., etc. Okay, now, I should have talked a little bit more about the tabas. Let me talk about that before we go on to anything else. Number one, obviously, the tabas kiddushin has to belong to the chosen. There are cases in which the chosen wants to use a ring that's been in the family. The best of circumstances, it's his grandmother's ring, and it's now in his possession because the grandmother is no longer living. It's got sentimental value. The first problem that I have in those cases is, and who gave him the ring? Generally, it's the mother who gave him the ring. She got her mother's ring when the mother died. Now she's giving it to the son. And was there an uncle who was a Yerish Indin? In which case, I'm not sure that it belongs to the mother in the first place. That's a bad enough problem. You may have Yush and Shini Rishus, I don't know. I don't know if the brother knew about it, if the brother was Miyayish or he wasn't Miyayish. In any event, that becomes a problem. Other times, you have somebody who's got good title to the ring and has given it to the chosen for use as a tabas kedushin, and really intended to give it to the chosen, and now the chosen is going to give it to the kala. It's not being lent. I mean, there are some strange cases where people are borrowing rings for purposes of the chuppah and will return it afterwards. And that's usually, I shouldn't say so strange. The chosen has listened to you with regard to the other things you told him about the ring. I'll tell you in a second. So he's bought her a beautiful diamond-studded wedding band, but you refused to be inside a kedushin with that, and I'll talk about why in a second. So he goes and he borrows his mother's ring, and the mother gives him the ring for the chuppah, and he gives it to the kala, and then he gives it back to his mother. You know, the father couldn't afford the diamond-studded ring when he was a chosen. He bought Hashem can afford a diamond-studded ring, and that's what the kala wants, that's what the kala gets. But that's a serious problem. I had one case in which the grandmother was giving a tabas kedushin. There was no shaylin din. She owned a tabas kedushin, and she wanted her granddaughter-in-law to wear it, you know, till May of Esrim Shona. It was presented to me as having sentimental value, blah, blah, blah. And I insisted on calling over the grandmother and two edim, and asking the grandmother whose ring it was, and she fell for it. She said, So she said, it's mine. I gave it to the chosen. I said, you realize it has to belong to the chosen? She says, yeah, Vadish knows it has to belong to the chosen. So I tell her again, Yiddish, you know you're giving it to him, and he's going to do whatever he wants with it, and you'll have no claim. She says, yeah, tell me, of course, that's what she wants. I said, no, very nice. Now please repeat it and say, Atem Eda. As ich will ihr soll sein Edim, as ich gib das jetzt, as a matone, far mein Enikel. I better repeat it in the presence of Edim to make sure there's Gemira's das here for all of this. But, your first problem is, if you're dealing with one of these things that hasn't been bought from the jeweler, make sure that it belongs to the chosen. There's strange cases in which the Kala buys her own ring, and you'll hear about it if you ask her who bought the ring. So you got to go through the same spiel over again. Make sure that she's makne to the chosen, and we don't need aiding to be makne and metalfalin. This is only to make a hocus pocus out of it, so that they take it seriously, not just as pro forma. You're making, you know, it's like the Mishnah Berurah says with Kabbalah's Kinyan for shlichus on mechiras chometz. Shlichus doesn't need Kabbalah's Kinyan. So Mishnah Berurah says it's for the Amoratsim. They think that it does, and it makes Gemira's das. You give them a handkerchief, they take it seriously. Just words, words are words. The lawyer told them words don't mean anything. But the handkerchief, the lawyer didn't tell him about, but the Rav did, he realizes the handkerchief is hocus pocus. Okay? But you got to make sure they understand that this is a serious business. Now, the other problem is the ring itself. Certainly not a diamond ring. Not a diamond ring or any other kind of a ring other than plain silver, gold, or platinum, for a simple reason. And that is that the Kala may think it's worth a lot more than it's really worth. In which case, she's Samech Das, she thinks that she's getting a $10,000 ring, and it turns out that it's not worth more than a couple of $100. It's a cheap ring. How does she know? Even on 47th Street, they don't know until they take out the loop and look at it, and even if they take out the loop and look at it, they know what it's worth. I won't know what it's worth. I have no idea why it's worth what it's worth. And, you know, frankly, I consider it, again, another one of those hocus pocuses. What difference does it make in terms of the utility of the, or even the beauty of the ring? Zircon sparkles better than diamonds. Don't try using zircon for an engagement ring. But in the shuk, to any bookie, it's got a value. So you need shumas bikim in order for the kala to know what it's worth. We're not going to start playing games with shumas bikim. You get three bikim and then figure out which is the value. It's not worth the hassle. Therefore, you don't use anything other than pure specie. Gold, silver, platinum. Now, you don't have to know what the silver or the platinum or the gold is worth for a very simple reason. Because it's worth what it weighs. And I don't have to know what today's fixing in London was for the gold. I know that I'm getting this hunk of gold, and I have it in my hand, and I presumably know the difference between a heavy ring and a light ring, and I know that what you see is what you're getting. That's I'm so that's on what it is. On whatever it weighs, that's what I'm taking. Now the problem is, and what contributes to the value of the gold? Gold on 47th Street is sold by the penny weight. And whatever the shari is in the shuk, they all charge the same amount. It's more than they charge in London, but that's because he's a seicher. He's got to make money on it. Now, stones clearly add to the value. There are other things that add to a value. If you don't go to 47th Street, but you go to, you know, a jeweler or whatever, you're likely to get, or they'll try to sell you, a gold filigree. You've got some artist who's been making these rings, and he's an woman who's kind of shvachli. He's charging you not just for the gold and not just for his labor, but he's charging you because he's an uman, so he knows how to make fancy designs, and not everybody commands the same price for the same, you know, kind of work, because one's a better uman than the other. Don't ask me what that means, but art is art. It's all in the eye of the beholder. He just needs shuma. I don't know how white doesn't need shuma. Of course it needs shuma. Don't tell me it's simple gold. It's not simple gold. It's got the artistry in here. Now, this takes me to things that I can't show to you, Biksav, and I don't think most Masadri Kushner are even aware of it. But, and I wouldn't have known if I weren't married. When I got married, I discovered something. I discovered that when I went to 47th Street and I asked for a Tabas Kedushin, the guy pulls out two trays. He had more than two trays, but he had two different kinds of rings. One ring he puts on the scale and he quotes a price. And any ring in that tray is sold by the penny weight at kach v'kach per penny weight. You will laugh. I was embarrassed at the time, because back a while, I paid $3 for the ring. That's when gold cost $35 an ounce. But it was, you know, the weight of the gold was the value of $3. Then he shows me the second tray, and he puts it on the scale, and he's quoting higher prices for the on the penny weight. He's selling to me by the penny weight. but he's quoting higher prices. So I asked him, what's the difference between this and this? So he shows me that the second one has a design, not artistic design. It's made with a die. It had fleur-de-lis, it had this, it had that, and the other, but somebody's got to do this. It's additional labor. And they charge not a, you know, a flat fee for the fleur-de-lis, for the design, for what have you. They add it to the weight. So he's charging whatever it was per penny weight for plain gold, and the same thing plus a dollar when it comes with a little design. So I suddenly realized that I didn't know this, and my colleague doesn't know this. She probably thinks that this is filigree or who knows what, that it's art, and therefore it should require shuma. I don't know why it doesn't require shuma. You're paying not for the weight. You're paying for something that enhanced it. It's the it's a machine artist instead of a custom made piece of art. So it's like a painting that you ran off 20 copies. But mechatesa sounds to me as if it requires shuma. Now, to be sure, there was a third tray. The third tray had, I don't know what you call it in English, I call it pasaklach. It had just a plain indent on the top and on the bottom, and that he gives you for nothing. He takes only for the gold, I presume because you don't have to construct a fancy machine to do this. I have no problem with that, other than that the chosen is likely to get confused if you tell him that's okay. So basically what I tell the chosen is plain silver, gold, platinum ring with nothing on it. It's okay if it's stamped inside 14 or 18K, that we'll accept, but nothing else. And saying that 14K is acceptable is a kula gadola. If you went in, I told you I'm a foreign rabbi, if you looked at all the materials I gave you, there's a Zecher Simchi, it's page 32. The Zecher Simchi, my question with regard to any of this is, does whatever is on this ring, did it add to the value or didn't add to the value? That wasn't the Zecher Simchi's problem. The Zecher Simchi says any engraving renders the ring no good. Why? Because he says, Mekadesh Hariat Mekadeshosli B'Tabaz Zu, that means this Tabaz in the singular. And you have a Gemara with regard to a Shefer in which there's Chekika, Shefer Echad Omar Achmona, V'lo Shtei Shefers. The Chekika, the engraving on the Shefer, turns it into two Shefers. So here it's not a Tabas, it's Tabois. And, you know, to me, and the Chosn will take two rings and say, Hariyat Mekadesh Yisliba Tabas, Zoo, and hand both of them to the Kala, and she's got both of them. What somebody will tell me is a problem with Yesh Breira. I don't know which one he was Mekadisher with. He gave her both. I know what the Shaila is. Either. But he thinks it's the Chakika. That's why I said if it's Chakika, for all I know, the 14K makes it a problem for the Bamberger in the Zecher Simcha. I don't really consider it to be a serious shash, and basically I wouldn't worry about it. Okay, anything with regard to any of this? There are a number of things that I wanted to do today yet. I'll have to leave most of them for next time, but we still can steal a few more minutes because I have enough trouble finishing next time anyway. There are one or two little points that I should make with regard to the Seder Kedushin itself. And one of those is with regard to whether the Masader Kedushin should himself be one of the Edim on the Kedushin. Now, if you remember, there was some kind of a Taram at an institution, 125th Street in Broadway, a number of years ago, with regard to whether women can be rabbis. I'm not interested in entering into that, but the major objection that they had was that one of the functions of a rabbi is to be Masader Kedushin, and there often aren't kosher edim available, so that the rabbi is the aid. And if you have a female rabbi, you've got a problem because she's not qualified to serve as an aid. That none of those people, male or female, is qualified to serve as an aid, because to quote Rav Moshe, Kol Shneisil Hashem Conservativi, Harezem Muchsak Le Mumer Ve'ein Sarech Edim VeHasroa VeHachroza VeChulei VeChulei. But whatever the problem is, that rabbis often function as an aid. So what's so terrible? He also gets paid for this. So the problem is, he's now a neutral schar lahoid. He's now taking money to be an aid. Now, obviously not aidi hagode, he's one of the aidim l'kiyumo, l'kiyum hadover. Is this kind of an aid? Is he allowed to take money for this or not? Now, the basic issue here is, what is the role of taking money for? You have a number of sources that have come from, you know, the same school. It's attributed ultimately to Reb Nosson Adler. It comes first from Avraham Bing, who said the name of Reb Nosson Adler. Avraham Bing was a Talmud of Reb Nosson Adler together with Chassam Sofer, and they say that the Rav shouldn't be an aid because he gets paid for Seder Kedushin. The Binyan Tzion, if I remember correctly, says that there's no problem. That's not why the Rav gets money. The Rav gets money for making the bracha. He doesn't get money for being the Seder Kedushin. Now, I find it rather difficult to understand, and it'll make nafkaminas for other things that I'll talk about in a moment. Why in the world does somebody pay me, Brian? What am I balabat? Talmidim, you never take money. But the balabos, I go to see the Kedushin, and he gives me a check afterwards. What does he give me a check for? For singing Miyadir? No, I try to avoid singing Miyadir. You don't want me to sing Miyadir. And I won't sing it, I'll say it. He doesn't need me to make the Birkas Erisin. He can get the Chazan to make Birkas Erisin. I don't think that he's paying me because he likes my voice, or he needs me to make the bracha because he and the Chazan are such Amaratzim, they can't make the bracha himself. I think he's paying me to make sure, number one, that the ksuv is kosher, and number two, that there is kiddush and kedas meishav Yisrael. He's paying me schar tircha for all of that. And if I'm now taking money to be an aid on the kedushin, so I end up being a neitel schar lahoy. I mean, it all ends up with, why am I taking money? What's the payment for? Is it the payment, like I got schar bracha, or is this payment like you go to an attorney to draft a will? You're drafting the will and the supervision of the attorney. He has to make sure that it's valid, and if it's not, you can sue him later for malpractice. This is fundamental. It has a ramification with regard to another problem, Bavi Nisena Harabim, and that is, somebody's come up with a bright idea that in our generation, and it comes from Eretz Yisrael, but things from Eretz Yisrael have a way of crossing the ocean. And it started off in the irreligious kibbutzim that I gather weren't terribly monogamous to start with. And in addition to all of that, there was the chash that they will separate and they won't have a get, and I'll be marbe mamzerim b'Yisrael. So these people thought they had a solution to the problem. Solution to the problem is not to have kiddushin, but you have to have kiddushin. So you manage to be mesader kiddushin and make sure the kiddushin are possible. Like I said at the very beginning with regard to the doim from Yankov Kamenetsky. So they make sure that that there's no valid kiddushin. They do whatever it is to make sure that there's no valid kiddushin. Now, I have problems with regard to all of this. My problem is, number one, that just because the person is not exactly a tzaddik yisod olam doesn't mean that he wants to be over on poni abola apnuya. I mean, I hear tell. I mean, there's some things that still mean something to people. And enom chayta v'loy loy, the guy will do a cold avarosa. But he's a mur l'teyoven. And if he can have a wife beheter, why should he have the yisur poni abola apnuya? So you're being machshul him the yisur poni abola apnuya for starters. I don't know what the heter is to do that. Number two, I don't know what the heter is to make birkas erusin if it's not a valid kedushin, so it's a prochel avatola. And number three, and I don't consider it a joke, you're getting paid for this. What's he paying you for? Now, if you're being paid to make the prochel avatola, no, okay. But if the payment is to be mesadik kedushin, it turns out to be kedushin psulim, I think you're postulatus now, at least the second time around. You're a goslin. You took money for something that you didn't do. We call that a goslin. You have no right to do this. So I don't think that that's an eitzah, but it's me'inyin v'eitzah with regard to what it is that the rov takes schar for. So if the rov is getting schar for supervising the kiddushin, then these people had problems because they thought he was a neutral schar lohi. Now there were, if you go to the Eitzer HaPoiskim, you'll find that there were people who spoke about this, and some of them pointed out that at least once upon a time, the minhag Yisrael was for both tzaddikim to pay the rov. So under those circumstances, well, I shouldn't say. Either way, you're being neitel schar lohi maybe for both of them, but they seem to think that there wasn't the same problem. I think that most poskim maintain that what you're getting is basically schar batola. Now, if it's reasonable schar batola, probably yes. If it's exaggerated fee, then I doubt that it's schar batola, in which case it may be matona b'alma, I'm not quite sure. Others argued that it was part of the schiris, as part of the salary. And indeed, some, once upon a time, it was included in the ksav rabonis. You were allowed to take money for some things and not for other things, and it was more or less anticipated as part of the schirus whenever there was a wedding. And I think that the rov was entitled to it, even if he wasn't Masada Kedushin, at least once upon a time. In Frankfurt on the Hudson, which isn't so far from here, Ad Hayoim, the rov is not permitted to accept what in England they call backenders, or what in this country is called vest pocket fees. He wouldn't dream of taking money, but there are certain exceptions. Seder Kedushin is one of the exceptions. He's allowed to take money for Seder Kedushin. And my impression is that in Europe, it was even the Ksav Rabonis, and even if he let somebody else be Masada Kedushin, that was part of the Schirus. So it was part of the Schirus. That was, you know, the among the Terim that they had floating around. In any event, we ran out of time again. We'll finish next time in the session.